May it please the court, my name is Mark Schwanee, registration number 22677. I represent Antonia Yu, Ann Steele, and Mary Whitfield, each a healthcare worker at the State Veterans Nursing Home at Fitzsimmons. I'll focus my comments and argument today on issue number one, statutory construction of section 2450.104.5(1). And the intent of the General Assembly as it relates to that provision.
Counsel, may I ask you a question before you turn to the merits of your argument? And I'll also ask opposing counsel as well. What is the final agency action we're reviewing here? Is it the director's determination?
It's correct. It's the director of Department of Personnel Administration, their agency decision. Thank you. My clients would argue this is a case of plain language and the interpretation of commonly accepted meaning of the statute's terms. The facts of the case are relatively straightforward, and there's little factual dispute as it relates specifically to the issue of overtime payment. All three healthcare workers were considered essential employees pursuant to the statute. All three were granted periods of authorized paid leave, which they used. And all three completed work weeks in which the periods of authorized paid leave, when counted with their time worked, equaled more than 40 hours in the work week, qualifying them for overtime payment. None of the parties contest the fact that at the completion of the respective work weeks, all three employees were eligible for overtime pursuant to the statute. Rather, the parties contest whether the statute allows for the employer to alter that calculation by rescinding its authorization of paid leave after completion of the work week. Read in its entirety, the statute's plain meaning results in the conclusion that once the leave has been taken and the work week completed, the employer cannot rescind an authorization of paid leave to avoid the payment of overtime.
Mr. Schwanee, you state in your brief that employees do not contest that an appointing authority can, in a sense, withdraw the authorization of paid leave by denying, delaying, or canceling the authorization of paid leave prior to completion of the work week.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, so the only question, it seems to me, is when can the cancellation be done? And you claim it can only be done before they begin the leave?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Why? Where does that come from?
I think the plain meaning of the both the word authorized and then the director's administrative procedures as it relates to deny, delay, or cancel clearly under its plain language means that they're entitled to the authority to deny, delay, or cancel any time up to that point of taking the authorized leave. It's understood that one clearly cannot deny what has already been taken, one can't delay what is already taken, and you certainly can't cancel what is already taken. At the point where they've taken it, and especially in this case, where the work week has been completed, and we've now, days later, gone back and altered the timesheets to avoid the payment of overtime. This has now gone beyond what was contemplated by the General Assembly in creating this language of authorized paid leave.
Mr. Schwanee, what about a situation where an employee begins authorized leave, let's assume it's 2 days, and the employer calls up after the first day and says, you've got to come back. I don't care how sick you are. We're in desperate need. What would your position be under those circumstances?
In that case, I think the employee is entitled to that first day of leave where they've it's been authorized and it's been taken. But as far as the second day, I think it's a fair argument to say that the appointing authority is entitled to, in a sense, cancel that leave and say emergency or whatever situation, we're entitled to cancel your leave and bring you back.
Even if the employee has bought plane tickets to go on their trip of a lifetime and in reliance upon the extra pay that they thought they were going to get, now they're not getting it anymore, that's okay?
Yes, I think that is okay. Now, there may be other reasons, and, you know, maybe the employee is tied to something with a plane ticket. But that being said, I think the statute just simply contemplates a very simple equation, that being prior to taking the leave, it can be canceled or delayed, denied, canceled. After it's taken, it's in a sense a legal fiction, because our argument would be it's no longer canceling, it's rescinding the authorization. And that's not contemplated in the statute or the director's administrative procedures.
What about if there's a calculation, if you're right, if your analysis is correct, could an employer say grant leave for 2 days, have the employee work for 2 days, and then all of a sudden realize, whoops, we're about to run into an overtime situation, don't come to work today. You're not getting leave, just don't come to work today.
Short answer is yes, and it happens on a regular basis. There are many times that regardless of the leave issue, employee may have worked 45 hours in the week. They come up on their last day of work, and the employer says, and they're perfectly entitled to by statute and rule, says, go home after 3 hours. We don't want to pay you 5 hours of overtime, and we don't need you. You can pick up whatever you were doing next week. So in that sense, the appointing authority retains a tremendous amount of, I think, authority and power to regulate the work week of a worker.
So if they do it correctly, it's perfectly okay?
Correct. Okay. It's purely this sort of what we call legal fiction, this idea that once authorized paid leave is taken and the work week completed, rescinding it is not contemplated by the statute.
Why? I think you put another qualifier in there. Why in the work week completed after it's been taken? Oh, I see, because they wouldn't have regulated, or they wouldn't have done other things that they could have done to regulate the amount of work hours. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Again, we consider de novo review in this court appropriate for the statute because we contend it's not ambiguous. The starting point for the interpretation is this idea of it shall be counted as work time in determining overtime for the employees. Again, I think the mistake of the district court, the employer's counsel, and as well as the director has been this idea that they can move to the idea of altering the meaning of authorized without looking at what the meaning of shall is in this case.
Well, before we go there, it doesn't really tell us, does it? It's authorized as of a certain point in the statute, does it? In other words, along the lines of delay, deny, and cancel, why can't you deauthorize and therefore it's not any longer authorized? You can do that, you indicated. Right, but it doesn't actually tell us when you can do that in the statute, does it?
No, it does not.
So why is it not ambiguous?
Because the common meaning of authorized, we would argue, is the concept of once authorization is given, once leave is taken and accepted.
Does authorized say anything about once taken? Does the definition of authorized have anything to do with once taken?
Well, the common definition of authorized
is to empower,
is
to give permission.
To give power and permission.
Right.
And power and permission was given, and based on that giving of power and permission, an action was taken. It's no different than if I call a staff meeting yesterday, and I say this, and the staff has the meeting, and then today I say, I'm canceling the staff meeting. The staff looks at me and says, okay, but we've had the staff meeting, we've had the discussions, we've made the decisions. What does that mean? And that's the situation that occurred with these three employees. Once the authorization is given, the leave taken, the work week completed, it's gone. It's a legal fiction at that point. We'd add, too, that there's, in particular, the director's own policies, the director's administrative procedures emphasize this point. Director's Administrative Procedure 3-37 provides that essential non-exempt positions as designated by a department head shall have paid leave counted as work time. Here, and it's striking, this word we have argued about authorized is not even existing in the director's own administrative procedures. We would argue that that's a clear definition and provides meaning to this idea that authorized paid leave is once taken has to be counted toward the calculation of overtime. I'm going to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, are you going to split your time?
Yes.
Okay.
May it please the court, I'm Michelle Brissett Miller, counsel for the Department of Human Services. I will reserve some time for counsel for the Department of Personnel and Administration. We agree with the appellant.
Counsel, before we begin, can I ask you, what is the final agency action we're reviewing? Is it the director's determination?
Yes, it is a state personnel director's determination.
Thank you.
We agree with the appellants that the case revolves around the meaning of the word authorized in the statute 2450.104.5. The meaning of the word authorized is inferred from the statutory structure as a whole. In the statutory structure, within the total it's the entire statutory scheme for total compensation in the state personnel system relies on the state personnel director to interpret and apply total compensation principles, including the principle of overtime for essential employees. In the state personnel system, pursuant to the Constitution and director's administrative procedures, the appointing authority holds the authority to make all personnel decisions regarding an employee. So the appointing authority, not the employee, possesses the ultimate authority to authorize paid leave and determine a classified employee's work hours.
Subject to whatever statute,
correct,
or law there might. You're not claiming that the official can fail to abide by statute?
Correct, or administrative procedures. With respect to overtime for essential employees, it's the personnel director who's charged with interpreting the statute. The director promulgated Director's Procedure 334 to in following the statute, and that rule empowers the appointing authority to use discretion in managing overtime.
Well, let me ask you, if the rule is inconsistent with the statute, isn't the rule invalid?
The rule is not inconsistent with the statute.
Well, if the rule is inconsistent with the statute, isn't it invalid?
It could be, yes.
It could be. But under what circumstance would it not be if it were inconsistent with the statute?
Well, I agree. If the rule were inconsistent, okay, with the statute, it would be invalid.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm sorry, counsel.
The overtime statute falls squarely within the total compensation statutory scheme, and the language that is at issue in this case falls between two provisions that authorize and direct the state personnel director to oversee compliance and enforcement with employment and wage and hour laws. And a statute must be construed to further the legislative intent evidenced by the entire statutory scheme. And so given the placement of the overtime language, it's reasonable to infer that the legislature intended for the director to interpret and enforce this statutory overtime provision for essential employees.
Let me ask you, counsel, if we have a generic or general provision about overtime, and we have a specific provision discussing the situation before us, what controls, the generic or the specific statute?
The specific.
Okay. Why wouldn't this be 104.5, why wouldn't that be considered the more specific statute?
It is considered a more specific statute.
Okay.
And so I'm arguing that the director is empowered to interpret that more specific statute.
Let me ask you this. The director didn't appear to interpret that statute in the director's order. The director appeared to have applied a director's procedure,
which was promulgated to affect the statute that's at issue here. And we're arguing that that director's procedure is consistent with the statute.
Ms. Miller, could the appointing authority grant conditional authorization, subject to readjustment based upon the very factors that you want to have discretion to consider?
Certainly. The appointing authority, we argue, the appointing authority has authority to grant leave at the beginning of the work week, and then at any time during the pay period, decide whether or not that leave is authorized for purposes of payroll. This is not a situation in which the appointing authority rescinded time off. Those employees got their time off, and their leave was restored to their leave banks. The appointing authority merely said, we're going to restore these number of hours back to your leave bank in order to manage overtime liability, which Director's Procedure 334 says is permissible. And Director's Procedure 334 would only apply to paid leave for essential employees, because only essential employees can have paid leave count toward worked hours in the state personnel system. And the court should give deference to the interpretation given the statute by the state personnel director.
Again, counsel, I don't see any interpretation. I see the application of Director's Procedure 334. The district court appeared to try to interpret the statute and try to figure out authorized meant, but the director didn't seem very concerned with what authorized meant. Instead, the director said, well, under 334, we can do this.
The director
didn't tell us what authorized meant.
No, the director, I believe the director used a procedure that had been in place and interpreted by a previous director, which stemmed from an interpretation of the statute that authorized means that an appointing authority can cancel leave at any time in order to minimize overtime.
If we reject your argument, you raise all sorts of issues about what's going to happen to the public fiscal state if we do that, but can't you solve your problem entirely on a going forward basis by granting conditional authorization, which is expressly subject to revocation based upon the determination of the number of hours worked? But doesn't that solve your problem at least going forward? I understand that doesn't solve your problem today.
So If it allows the appointing authority the same discretion that the appointing that we argue the appointing authority had going forward, certainly I think a conditional authorization would be a more express way of acknowledging the practice. Yes.
And that would eliminate any reliance type interest, because the authorization would be expressly subject to be taken away.
Certainly. And the reliance would have to do perhaps with the idea of getting more pay, more overtime, but it wouldn't have to do with the idea of being able to take that time off or not, at least not in the circumstances we're discussing, because they get that time off.
What would such a conditional authorization look like? What would it look like? What would the supervisor say to the essential employee who's seeking sick leave?
Well, in a way, the rules already provide for an appointing authority or supervisor to cancel leave, so it would be just an express acknowledgement of the Director's Procedure 334, stating at any time we reserve the right to deny, delay, or cancel your leave. In this case, the appointing authority, Brad Hanna, was responsible for managing a budget that was practically on a shoestring, in that it relies on resident census and private pay and Medicare funding. And so any kind of overtime is a heavy lift for a facility like that. And so Mr. Honnell needed the flexibility in reviewing the cumulative effect of worked hours and requested leave hours after the work period was complete in order to determine his facility's overtime liability and manage his budget. And we argue that the statute, with its language regarding authorized, and the director's administrative procedures, give him the tools that he needs to do this. And I'm going to reserve my time for the counsel for the Department of Personnel and Administration.
Thank you.
Before we begin and we start the clock running, could I ask one procedural question of counsel?
Sure.
Counsel, may I ask you a question? How is it that we have two members of the Attorney General's office here to defend one final action by the director?
Well, my co-counsel is here to represent the Department of Health and Human Services at Fitzsimmons in this action. They were named as parties to this case. And then I'm here to represent the Department of Personnel and Administration.
Well, you answered my question. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Trisha Lakey, attorney registration number 39942. I'm here to represent the Department of Personnel and Administration and the personnel director in this matter. I would like to address some of the questions that the other attorneys have received from this panel. One of the points that may be helpful to consider is, in effect, the employees are arguing that leave becomes vested once it's taken, once they act on that leave. But the record in this case doesn't show such a clean chronology of events, because at least two of the employees had taken sick leave and then requested it afterwards, after the fact, which often happens with sick leave. So it's pretty fluid is the situation with taking leave. And so ultimately, the hours that are worked, the hours of leave that are taken, cannot really be reconciled until payroll is actually processed.
Well, the department had the discretion to deny that leave, didn't it? Or paid leave. It had the discretion to deny paid leave, didn't it?
Yes, it did. But the problem is that they may not necessarily know what the total hours are, because the employee may not work a set schedule, an essential employee.
And wouldn't the employees be called in to work some abnormal hours to go over that 40-hour work week in reliance on the fact that they had been authorized for paid leave?
Wouldn't they be called in to go over the 40 hours?
Yeah, in other words, you know, you want to retroactively adjust the time. And yet, can't the employees rely on the fact that those 8 hours would count towards any right to overtime compensation?
Well, that's the issue here in this case.
Yeah, that's right. That is the issue. What's the authority that gives the director to countermand the language of the statute?
Well, the director's rules were promulgated under that statute that we're discussing, 2450.104.5, as well as the director's overall overarching authority to set the rules for the personnel system in the state. Those citations are at the very beginning of the rule section that we're discussing here. And then the director, in interpreting that rule, promulgated the directive that the appointing authority may cancel or delay the leave request, leave requested.
So are you saying the director's interpretation is nothing more than the district court's interpretation? In other words, the director has the very same interpretation that the district court had?
I think that's implicit. It's correct that the director in her review did not analyze the statute, but I believe implicitly that analysis was done in part of promulgating the rule, because promulgation is done under the APA rulemaking.
It's interesting when you say implicit, because the district court didn't rely on the director's procedure, did it?
The district court, I think, was taking more of a de novo review of the statute, but it did discuss the director's interpretation in the decision that was made.
What is the final cutoff for being able to cancel the authorization? What's the point in time when it becomes final for all purposes?
At the time that payroll is processed and run is the general cutoff, because that's the time the appointing authority will have an accounting of exactly how many hours was worked, how many hours of leave were requested, and initial approval given for. At that time, those things are run, and then the timekeeper can make adjustments at that point in time. Now, there are situations where later adjustments are made retroactively for things like miswiped breaks and things like that. So that does happen, but that's a relatively rare occurrence.
But why do you choose that day? Why not the end of the year? And how do you pick one date versus the other? I say, no, I think they should have the discretion to cancel the leave by December 31st at midnight. Why don't you claim that as opposed to what you are claiming, and what's the basis for that distinction?
Well, I think that the basis for that distinction is because at the very end of the year, you've already recognized the liability for that particular pay period as a known quantity, and payroll is determined by a certain number of hours worked per week. So the payroll is driven by a work week calculation, and it's run, I believe checks are cut on a monthly basis, but the calculation for your payroll is a weekly.
Why couldn't you lay somebody off then for the month of December to make sure that there was, you know, going to be in the, you know, the budget would fit?
I suppose you could. You could make layoffs for budgetary reasons. I mean, that's ultimately the fiscal considerations that an appointing authority has to reconcile is why there is the discretion to deny, cancel, leave in order to minimize the overtime liability, to provide that safety valve for fiscal prudence.
It seems to me the statute is designed to confer a benefit on employees. The statute doesn't appear to be designed to create fiscal relief for the employer. Do you agree with that?
I think including the word authorized was the legislative effort to provide some discretion for fiscal reality and fiscal checks from the appointing authority. And then the director's rules that were promulgated recognized that possibility that the leave may need to be canceled in order to minimize or manage the overtime liability. The statute, I'm out of time, but the statute has that word authorized in it to distinguish it from just paid leave in general. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
When the statute is read as a whole, with the first sentence in subsection 1 and then the second sentence in subsection 1, which we're now debating, the court comes to, I believe, should come to a conclusion that the legislature intended that there should be a special class, a narrowly drawn class of employees, those who provide essential state functions, and that narrow class of employees should be entitled to differing rates of pay or procedures for pay because of the need for them to provide for the health, safety, and welfare of the state. The appointing authority has all the powers necessary to control overtime, including changing the actual hours worked within the work week. The district court made a particular point of talking about the potential windfall to employees. We would argue that there is not a windfall per se. States, including Colorado, often enact laws that provide for wages that exceed the federal requirements under federal wage and hour law. We would argue this is the case. It's no different than when the state decides to have a higher minimum wage than what exists in federal law. The General Assembly is certainly empowered to make those decisions, and we believe has done so in this case. Based on that, we don't believe it's a windfall for employees. And given that the appointing authority has the powers necessary to control their overtime, does not cause a fiscal burden on the state. This includes requiring employees to get permission before they perform any work that would result in overtime. All of these are tools that exist to the appointing authority to control their budgets.
Mr. Schwanee, if the appointing authority, could the appointing authority delegate the task of determining where the employees are on this 40-hour work week to some subordinate? Because as I understand it, the appointing authority has supervisory powers over a whole lot of folks. And if it's his obligation or her obligation, whoever's in that post, to make sure that they don't go over 40 hours, it's almost impossible to do. So could you delegate that to someone else to keep track of it and say, we're just not going to do this. We're not going to go over 40 hours unless it's a huge emergency.
Yes, the statutes do allow for appointing authorities to delegate much of their powers to supervisors under their supervision. We see this in disciplinary actions. We see it in other places. And in this case, this is to a certain extent what happened. The appointing authority, Brad Hunnell, didn't make this decision and frankly was probably not aware of it. The payroll officer for Fitzsimmons Nursing Home was the one who made the decision. So yes, we would, we believe they could.
What is the cutoff, according to you, as to when the final time is that the appointing authority can cancel previous authorization?
We would argue that the cutoff is prior to taking the leave. Now, maybe that's 1 minute prior to taking the leave. But once the leave is taken, we believe authorization can't be withdrawn. In a sense, it's not a withdrawal of the authorization, it's a withdrawal of the completed leave to avoid the payment of overtime.
So on a multi-day leave, could each day it be canceled? Or is it once it starts, that's the end of it?
I would argue that, it's a slippery slope. And I'll, for instance, if if the employee takes a day of leave, let's say they're in for surgery, they have outpatient surgery on day one, they're recovering on day two. I would argue that it's very hard for the appointing authority to withdraw it at that time.
It's probably also hard to get them to come back and work a lot of extra overtime, isn't it?
I would agree, Your Honor.
Huh.
Yes. Probably another situation that becomes more thorny is 2 days of vacation. If 1 day of vacation is taken, can the appointing authority call them back on day two? I would argue they could under the director's administrative procedures. With that, we would ask that the court overrule the district court's ruling and order that the employees be awarded overtime based on the statute. Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments, all of you, today. The case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.